Today is January the 6th, the Christian feast of the Epiphany. That's the one with the three wise men. In Ireland, it's also Nullag na mBan, the day Christmas formally comes to an end. The tree gets sent to the recycling, and you're supposed to treat the women in your life. For the Catholic Church, it marks the official close of the Jubilee year. And what an eventful year it has been for the Church, with the death of Pope Francis and the election of Pope Leo. It's News Talk Daily, I'm Shane Beattie. Well, the Jubilee year promised renewal, and at least at times, that's what we saw. You might remember last summer's Jubilee of Youth, which drew more than a million participants to Rome. But here at home, mass attendance continued to decline, and vocations to the priesthood remain low. Today, we're looking back at the Jubilee and asking what it achieved. Talk about Leo, a man described as a centrist dad pope with a scientific mind who favours order and tradition over Francis's more disruptive style. And we'll explore Ireland's place in all of this too. And to help me do that, I'm joined on the podcast today by Michael Kelly, Director of Public Affairs at Aid to the Church in Need and author of a recent biography of Pope Leo. And you're very welcome to News Talk Daily, Michael.
Hi, Shane. Thank you.
So we've the formal end of the Jubilee year. In case people don't know, what is that actually supposed to do?
Yeah, so a Jubilee year is held in the Catholic Church every 25 years. And symbolically what happens, I mean, the most visible thing that people will see is the Pope goes around Rome and he opens these so-called holy doors on these ancient basilicas. And the idea is that it's a time to start again. It's a time to indulge in God's mercy. It's a time to kind of leave the past behind. It's a time to, you know, forget about regrets and just do a bit of a spiritual reset, if you like. So say those happen every 25 years. They always have a theme. This one, Pope Francis dedicated to hope. I think he discerned that with all that's going on in the world, people needed a profound message of hope. So that really was the focus on the year. But these have been going on for about 500 years. Mm.
And a big focus on trying to get young people connected to faith during that Jubilee. We had what was called a Catholic Woodstock.
Yeah, this on the outskirts of Rome, the Jubilee of Youth held out at the Tor Vergata just outside Rome. And, you know, this gathers together young people from all over the world, including thousands from Ireland. And, you know, what the really important thing about something like World Youth Day, and this is why the Irish Church was so keen to become involved in it. I mean, if you're a young person going to Mass in Ireland, unless you're part of a youth group, you know, you probably view yourself as few and far between. Whereas if you go there to Rome, you see these young people just like you from every part of the world celebrating their faith together, unashamed of their Catholic faith, you know, very, very clear to present it, to celebrate it. So that gives a huge shot in the arm to the young people from countries like Ireland. And I know speaking with many of the young people who came back from Ireland, they acutely felt this. They acutely felt, gosh, you know, we're not few and far between. Actually, there are lots and lots of us throughout the world. And in other countries, young Catholics are unafraid to celebrate their faith. And perhaps that's something we should bring back to our own parishes. And that always has been the idea behind these ever since John Paul II started these way back in the 1980s. And of course, this was Pope Leo's first encounter with young people as well. So a real opportunity for them, in a sense, to try to get to know him over the few days as well.
Did you feel that the most recent Jubilee was a success? And what about the level of engagement with the church?
It was a difficult one in a sense because, of course, it started off on Christmas Eve with Pope Francis. And, of course, Pope Francis was very, very frail at that stage. And then a few months into the Jubilee year, having not been able to attend a lot of the celebrations, a lot of the ceremonies, Pope Francis died. So, I mean, that was a major part of it. I mean, had Pope Francis have lived and his health continued to decline as it would have, I think the Jubilee year really wouldn't have caught fire at all. I think the fact that Pope Francis died and, you know, a new, young, enthusiastic Pope came in, I think that gave new impetus to the Jubilee year. I think Pope Leo embraced it with great enthusiasm. So a lot of the events took on an added importance. There's also the fact that, Catholics like to go to Rome with a new pope. People are interested in what the new pope is like, what the new pope has got to say. There's also the fact that Pope Leo speaks several languages. So I think that made the Jubilee events more engaging. So it really turned out to be an extraordinary year. I mean, it's very, very uncommon in church history. I think it's only happened once before that a Jubilee would be opened by one pope and closed by another pope. So that made it a unique Jubilee year. But I think we can probably break it into two parts. We can break it into the Pope Francis Jubilee, which was the first few months in which the Holy Father unfortunately wasn't able to participate in much due to his ill health. And then the second, the Leo Jubilee, in which Pope Leo was enthusiastically and energetically able to be at everything.
And very convenient for people attending that they happened to be in Rome in the Vatican when the Pope died.
Yeah, I mean, the Pope died on Easter Monday. Obviously, I think all of us remember him going around the square on Easter Sunday and, you know, blessing people and greeting people. And certainly he was very, very frail at that stage. He could barely speak. He didn't look well at all. But I don't think anyone expected that he would die the following morning. Easter, of course, being a very traditional time when many people do go to Rome. So many people found themselves in Rome for that most unique of occasions. I mean, you could visit Rome 100 times and not be there for the death of the Pope and the election of a new Pope. So it really was an extraordinary time for people who found themselves caught up in that, because it's no exaggeration, Shane, to say when something like that happens, literally all eyes turn to Rome. I mean, within hours of Pope Francis dying, you have 6,000 journalists accredited to the Vatican, because, you know, there begins an ancient process of the burial of the deceased pontiff, of course, but then perhaps one of the most eccentric election processes in the world, the appointment of a new pope.
Yeah. Now, we had a million young people gather for this Jubilee. I'm just wondering what you think that tells us about young people and faith today, because you have a theory about young Irish boys and how they're feeling and maybe their search for faith.
Yeah, I mean, there certainly seems to be an increasing amount of evidence around the country that young men in particular, kind of university age young men in particular, are kind of coming back to faith in a way that wasn't apparent in previous generations. It's less evident at the moment, I would say, among younger women. I mean, there are certainly pockets of it. There are certainly youth groups that are attracting large numbers of young women. But I think it's most apparent among young men in Ireland at the moment. For a while, this was kind of anecdotal evidence, a little bit here and there. It seems to be a little bit more concrete now. People are speaking about it in a more concrete sense. And this is something that is mirroring a pattern that has happened in Britain, that has happened in the United States. So people are referring to it as a kind of as a quiet revival. And I think that's fair. I think it's fair to call it quiet. I mean, I wouldn't like to exaggerate this or say that, you know, churches over Christmas were suddenly filled with tens of thousands of young men. I mean, that wasn't the case, but there certainly is a noticeable revival. So it'll be interesting to see where that goes over the next number of years.
Someone was telling me recently when they were at Mass over Christmas, it was busier than they expected.
Yeah, that's what priests are saying. I mean, I know in my own home parish, we had 14 masses over Christmas between Christmas Eve and Christmas Day, and all of those were full. And I think that points to a very interesting pattern where many Irish people, I suppose, have developed a different relationship with the Catholic Church. It's not the relationship that perhaps their parents or their grandparents had that manifested itself in weekly attendance, but it's not an outright rejection either. They're not in a place where they're deciding to walk away, or they say somehow that Catholicism is nothing more to do with them. They're going at Christmas time, they're going at Easter time, they're going at weddings, you know, they're having their children baptized by and large. The challenge for the church, though, is how does the church turn that into something a bit more intentional? How does the church turn that goodwill that is there so people want to go out to Christmas Eve Mass or Mass on Christmas morning, but that they don't feel themselves drawn to come every week? And that really is the $64,000 question that parishes across the country are grappling with. How do you turn that goodwill into bums on seats every week?
Well, maybe you might do it by having a new pope. Let's talk about Pope Leo, because you've written a lot about him. Was he a surprise when he emerged from the conclave with that white smoke?
You know, Shane, he really was a surprise. He ought not to have been, but he was a surprise because he was an American. The wisdom in Rome has always been that America is too powerful politically, too powerful economically. So ecclesiastically, Americans have always been seen that they wouldn't be elected pope. So that is the logic with which everyone went into the conclave with. And so they dismissed Cardinal Prevost. But look, on paper, this guy was a star candidate. This guy speaks seven languages. He's from North America. He's entirely immersed in the missionary church in Latin America. He spent about half of his life touring the world, touring places where the church is growing rapidly in Asia, in Africa. He's a very shrewd administrator. He's someone who's very, very calm. He's someone who is cautious. So on paper, he ought not to have been a surprise, but for the fact that he was an American really did make him a surprise.
Is he boring?
I wouldn't say he's boring. I would say he's not as spontaneous, perhaps, as Pope Francis was. And I think people who work around the Pope will welcome that change of pace. I think people who worked for Pope Francis didn't know on any given day when they got up what the day was going to entail. So I think, you know, if you speak to anyone in officialdom, that's not something that they particularly like or enjoy. So I think the calmer approach, the more considered approach, is probably something that will be welcome. I mean, one of the things, and this is no secret, that emerged under Pope Francis was there were huge divisions in the church, huge divisions about what direction to take, what way to go. And, you know, Pope Francis seemed to think that in some way, you know, allow those divisions to happen and the divisions will work themselves out. Well, you know, human history doesn't really tell us that that's the case. In fact, divisions tend to get worse. I think Pope Leo is someone who is going to try to be more of a centrist. He's going to try to bring people with him. And that's something that he has shown in his ministry up to now. And I think that's something that he'll bring to the papacy. And I think that's one of the reasons why the cardinals chose him.
He's been called a centrist dad pope, which is usually a phrase reserved for Irish men on Twitter.
Yes, I mean, I've heard him called that, and it's not unfair. I think sometimes the centrist dads get a bit of an unfair rap. The centrist dads, in a way, are the worker bees, and I think Pope Leo will be like that as well. I think the church needs, in a time of polarization around the world, polarization in our politics, the kind of the logic of the jungle, where the person who shouts the loudest gets heard. I think a bit of centrism is no harm around that. And I think Pope Leo, I think, can bring perhaps that to the international stage, can bring that more reflective approach to the international stage.
Yeah. Just before Christmas, we had this Vatican Commission voting 7-1 against allowing women to serve as deacons. We're not even talking priests anymore, even deacons. They're saying no to this. Do we know how Pope Leo feels about women as priests or deacons? And how does he feel about reform?
Yeah, we don't know explicitly what he has said about female ordination or what his beliefs are there, but he has said in the past that, look, you know, this is not a solution to any issue in the church. I mean, creating more clerics, if you like. I mean, the issue or one of the challenges in the Catholic Church is this caste system has almost arisen whereby to be any good in the church or to exercise any authority in the church, you have to be a priest. And I think Pope Leo, with his background in canon law, would look at a rebalancing of that, so that people, regardless of their status within the church, would be able to exercise authority, would be able to exercise leadership, would be able to exercise responsibility within the church. So I think he'll probably try to take the question away from ordination into more co-responsibility. In terms of reform, I mean, look, the church at one level is always reforming. I think Pope Leo is someone who is very, very cautious. I think he will understand any reforms within the Catholic Church as reforms that must ensure that the Catholic Church remains to be authentically the Catholic Church. I mean, so you're not going to see a radical situation where 10 years from now, 15 years from now, people are going to go along to their local parish church and see a world completely transformed. That's not going to be the case. The Catholic Church, part of the appeal of the Catholic Church for people is that there's a kind of certainty there. You know what you get with the Catholic Church. And I think that's something that Pope Leo will continue with, while at the same time trying to implement reforms that make things more accountable, that make things more inclusive. So look, that's the challenge. I mean, 100 years ago in the world, there were about 300 million Catholics. So there's 1.4 billion Catholics today, you know, so it's a radically larger church than it was in the past. has, and it's a radically much more diverse church than it was in the past. And sometimes these obsessions that we have in Western Europe are not obsessions that exist in parts of the world where the church is growing. And frankly, that's what someone like Pope Leo is going to concentrate on. He's going to look at parts of the church, or parts of the world where the church is growing.
Okay, 13 men began seminary studies here in September, which brings the total number of seminarians to 77. I mean, they're not huge figures in terms of vocations for the priesthood. Do you see any hope that that is going to improve?
I mean, look, the figures are up marginally. I mean, it's very, very difficult when you're dealing with such small numbers to read trends or patterns into anything. I mean, there are two more candidates this year than last year, for example. But as I say, when you're dealing with low numbers like that, it's hard to interpret that as a trend. I mean, I think the challenge is that the vocations crisis, as they call it in the church, has been something that has been seen in isolation. I think the challenge is to see it in a wider context. The crisis of vocations really is a crisis of faith. I mean, if you have far fewer people going to Mass than were going to Mass in the past, that means the pool that you're drawing from in terms of future candidates for the priesthood is much smaller. I mean, at a time when, say, 70, 80% of young men were attending Mass regularly, I mean, you had all of that pool to draw from who might consider priesthood. If you're in a situation where less than a third of young men are attending Mass regularly, I mean, that really tells its own story. So I think if the church can have a reset in terms of faith and in terms of involving and engaging younger people, then I think the vocations crisis is something that that will over time fix itself. But the short to medium term picture is very bleak, because in our parishes we really are running out of priests. I mean, anyone who is regularly engaged in their parish or even only attending over Christmas will see the vast majority of priests are in their late 60s, early 70s. Most of them will have retired in the next 5 to 6 years. A lot of parishes that are still going are going on the goodwill of elderly men, sometimes often they're in their 80s. And this is something that was exposed during COVID, when a lot of older people had to isolate themselves and had to, that dreadful word, cocoon. But that showed the systemic weakness that was there in the church. And that's not going to get better anytime soon, because, you know, even if the seminaries were to fill up, tomorrow or the day after that, it still takes 7 or 8 years for someone to be ordained a priest. So that's not a problem that's going to fix itself in the short to medium term. So it is going to necessitate a lot of difficult and painful decisions. There are going to be an increasing number of parish communities that won't have a resident priest, and perhaps won't even have weekly Mass. We'll be moving to a situation where they have Mass maybe once a month.
Well, you could get women as priests, and that would solve some of the problems.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that's a direction that the church is going to take. I mean, that's not something that the Pope or the Catholic Church believes is part of the future of the church. And I mean, it's not something that has helped in the other Christian denominations either. I mean, if you look at the Christian denominations that have female ordination, they're facing many of the people power challenges that the Catholic Church is facing. So that's why I think it does come back to this wider crisis of faith. I mean, if you have much fewer people interested in faith, then understandably you're going to have much fewer people willing to make that long-term commitment to ministry.
You're involved with Aid to the Church in Need Ireland, which supports persecuted Christians worldwide. And of course, we've parts of the world where Christians are facing violence, persecution and social pressure. That'll be one of the issues that Pope Leo is really going to have to focus on. Do you think we're going to see him in Ireland anytime soon?
No, we're not going to see him in Ireland anytime soon. I mean, it's really only 7 years since Pope Francis was there, and I don't think that Ireland is going to be a major priority for Pope Leo. I mean, I wouldn't rule it out if you come something like 2032. That'll be the 1600th anniversary of when St. Patrick first came to Ireland. So I wouldn't rule it out for some time like then. But I think for now, he's going to be concentrating on parts of the world where the church is in trouble. I mean, as you mentioned, I work for Aid to the Church in Need. We were really thrilled that the first visit that he made was to Turkey and to Lebanon. Those are both countries where Christians are under immense pressure. They're countries that have an ancient Christian tradition that really has dwindled to a small minority now. I mean, it's a sobering reality to think that about 413 million Christians, about 1 in 7 Christians around the world today, live in parts of the world where they don't have full religious freedom. So I think that's what he's going to be concentrating on. I mean, I think any renewal that has to happen in the church in Ireland, that's onto us. That's something that we have to do here. And I think if that's something that that we could meaningfully achieve, then I think something like 2032, to look at that 1600th anniversary of the arrival of St. Patrick, I think that's something that we could work towards. But, you know, look, that's still 6 years away, so that's a long time.
Indeed. Okay, Michael Kelly, thank you for being here with us on News Talk Daily. That's all we have time for on the podcast today. I'm off to Mass now. If you're still catching up on your listening after the break, be sure to explore the News Talk Daily archive on the Go Loud player. And we'll be back first thing tomorrow with a fresh edition of News Talk Daily. Until then, bye-bye.